Hargreaves, reel 2.
Yeah, heading. And I was fairly lucky because.
How quickly did you get your. Did you find the other members of the ship quite quickly?
Yes, in fact, I found two. I was in Commanding B Company. I found two platoons quite quickly, and we were very near where we ought to be. We were able to capture our objective, which was the hill overlooking Le Mouy, which was a village, and the road coming up from the beaches was our particular job.
And your task was?
Well, to capture that hill. That end of Le Mouy, which is the southern end of the town. And we found, you know, to take on...
And the road?
Leading up north from the beaches, because we went in north of the beaches. And the road that was coming.
Yeah.
And the brigade job, I think, was principally to stop the armoured reserves, which was a place called Draguignan, I think, is where there was an armoured division. And the idea was to stop them coming down to the beachhead. As I know, they never did.
I know that area quite well.
Do you?
We've got chums who have a villa in San Rafael.
Oh, well, right, it lives on the beach.
The other day we were driving to the end of the Verdon Gorges.
Oh, yes.
Which you drive up through Draguignan.
Draguignan,
yeah. Of course, it's changed a bit because of the huge auto route.
Yeah,
goes
right along,
actually through the DZ.
Well, there is a little war memorial in the Mouy.
Is there? To
us,
yeah. Yeah.
To the British parachutists who landed.
Right.
It's at a farm called La Motte, L-A-M-O-T-T-E. It's a crash glider. And a little, Tony Hibbert and I have been to see it when we've been yacht racing down there. He and I used to go and race yachts and have the farm.
Yeah.
For a while, and we went to there. Let me get the coffee. Comparatively Boy Scout stuff.
Mm.
You know, the Germans we came across were largely non-Germans. You know, they were, I don't know what they were quite, they were, a lot of them were resting from Russia and that sort of thing. They weren't keen to fight. I mean, they had to fight. We did have a bit of unpleasantness.
Yep.
We had quite a few characters in a way, you know. But it wasn't serious fighting. It was mopping up.
Yeah.
Some of them, you had to mop up, were serious. The rest of them weren't.
Yeah.
And someone, just off the record, one embarrassing thing, that going up this hill we had to capture, and I only had these two platoons, because the third platoon were dropped very wide in another plane. A lot of Germans came out with their hands up, sort of surrendering in the morning light. And speaking, I thought, very good English with an American accent. They turned out to be American parachutists sort of surrendering because they thought we were Germans. So I had two officers and about 25 Americans who had been dropped totally in the wrong place. They should have been 30 miles away, totally lost, didn't know what to do. Thought they were being rounded up by Germans and surrendered without firing a shot, I'm glad to say, otherwise we'd have had a sort of
Allied battle.
Yeah. But I put them under command of one of my platoon sergeants who looked after them all the day and the next day while we were having a bit of fighting, and then he marched them back across country to where they ought to be. And they were really very grateful and somewhat embarrassed. They haven't got over there. We didn't find some Germans later on, but first people we saw were these Americans, but that's better not go in the book. And some of the battalion, and Dick Cox and he'll tell you this himself, Dick was dropped fairly wide, I think, but Dan Calvert, who was commanding A Company, was dropped miles away and caught the bus in, caught a local bus to get into the battle.
The whole company, or just
no, Dan company. Himself.
Yeah.
And he got sort of sat on by a lot of old French biddies who actually went through a German control post with Dan being smothered with cabbages and things, coming in towards Le Mouy. And it took, the best part of the day, I would have thought, for the next day or the following day, was it, the Americans came back and flew over with supplies and everything, and dropped copies of the American paper, which was printed in Rome, you know, the troops newspaper, saying American pilots did a great job on dropping Jap smack on target, you know. They were only, you measure what they were used for.
Quite.
So, and we were there only 3 weeks, 4 weeks, was it? And then we were pulled off by ship and brought back to Italy, to Bari, where one or two of us, I had a short spell in hospital in Bari, and then we were getting ready to go to Greece.
Greece, right.
And we were there a very short time.
Yeah.
We were very suddenly told, Alexander, I think it was, who said he wanted us, he'd heard the Germans were starting to pull out of the Peloponnese.
Yeah.
And he wanted them jerked up and get a move on.
Right, yeah.
So very suddenly, without really much briefing at all, I got back to my company in time to get to go with them. We were mustered to fly off. From, I can't remember, Foggio, perhaps it was, or Bari or somewhere.
Right, yeah, yeah.
To Greece, which was, what, October, I think.
Yeah.
And we'd been in France in August, was it?
Did you think, I'm going back to France for a minute, did you think that you were going to stay in France, that you'd then sort of go on, follow up the Americans and stay there?
I didn't.
No.
I don't know what, no, I never really thought that, because the rest of the invasion force were Americans and French.
Right.
And the French obviously were going to go.
Well, right.
And the Americans as well. So I always rather suspected we would return.
Mm.
And incidentally, talking about flying into the south of France, I remember telling my blokes, trying to reassure them about the flying, that the flight path was from Rome was to go over Corsica. And that the beacons were going to be on Corsica, and the British Navy very kindly were going to surface some submarines to act guiding lights, so they would drop us in the right place. Mm. However, even those didn't help. These didn't help Dan Calvert. So special efforts were made to try and get these ships to drop us in the right place.
Were you the first company in to Greece?
No, I the first company in was Jamie Gurley.
Right.
Dropped on the first day.
And he was A, was he?
No, he was C company. Jamie dropped that day, if I remember rightly, to secure a dropping zone a sort of dropping zone.
Yes.
And then we all went in the next day. And Vic Coxon had the very difficult job of selecting a dropping zone from the air. I mean,
Didn't he go with the first wave?
I can't remember.
According to official history, he did.
Well, they are.
Sometimes official history is wrong, of course.
Well, we were asking him.
I'll ask him,
But we went in two waves.
Yeah.
And I went in the second wave, where we had a very bad drop.
And was there a lot of wind? The first day, there was a hell of a lot of wind, wasn't there? Was it the same the second day?
Second day, there was the Don Marsh, excellent chap, was killed on the jump. He'd been the, I think he'd been the mortar platoon sergeant all through North Africa with the 1st Battalion.
Yeah.
Got commissioned, and he was one of our subs, the excellent chap. Mm. Most amusing, a great big fellow, about 6'3", tough as a lion. And he was killed, smacked up against a rock. And a lot of people have broken arms and legs and things on that jump. Because we jumped into an olive grove, and there were loads of rocks, big rocks, all through it. And I always understood that Vic had to choose it, from the air.
Right.
Because we were certainly shown no plan before we went. We just said, look, we're going to Greece, and when the light comes on, jump.
We go.
What we did.
That's it,
And then the Germans were literally pulling out of Athens that day, and we commandeered a lot of Greek kites and things, and say, marching right round Salamis Bay, and
can I just get the
map?
Yeah. Not of Greece.
Yeah,
complete. I mean, not a small scale.
Well, I've got an ordinary atlas here somewhere.
You've probably got. Yeah, I got the maps that deal with this thing here. Quite a steep
with his company, Night Attack. And we had an enormous number of Greek partisans all coming as well, because we were linking up with them as we went.
Yeah.
And we had this awful business of trying to sort out who was a communist and who was a royalist. And they were much keener on fighting each other than they were fighting the Germans.
Yeah.
And they were, a lot of them, like at least a battalion strength, were due to move in on this mountain with Jamie.
Yeah.
And they were all there on the start line. And the Greeks never moved. And Jamie went in and took the whole brunt of it and had a... This is where he got a bar to his MC, and well deserved. And Rupert Teed was killed, I remember, who had been the Army heavyweight boxing champion. He was second in command. Rupert got shot in the neck, and they had a fearful job getting their casualties off before first light,
yeah,
down this mountainside. And it was a very tough battle. Jamie could tell you what actually happened. I was in reserve at the bottom. The hill could hear it all going on,
yeah,
but was not involved in it. And these bloody Greeks, the next morning when they went up to try and find any other sort of wounded and things, found our blokes had been stripped of their uniforms and everything, yeah, by our so-called allies. And they were, of course, then used against us 2 months later in Athens, in the communist revolution, that they knew what they were doing. They were just out to get everything they could in the way of arms and equipment and our uniforms to confuse us, knowing perfectly well that later on, when the revolution came, which it did at Christmas time, back in Athens,
yeah,
this would be useful. Very unpleasant. And then Pomp Force, this little force.
Pomp Force.
P-O-M-P.
Pomp Force.
God knows why it was called Pomp Force, but anyway it was. Went on to the Greek-Albanian border. The last Greek town we got to, a place called Florina. And then a few of us couldn't resist it, nipped across into Albania to keep the thing going. And then we were called back very smartly by Caro. Wireless messages came. We thought we were doing a good job. And then we were, and we, indeed we were, but we were then told to leave it to the Russians.
What was his name? Wilson, wasn't Caro, wasn't it? General Wilson.
Yes, that's right. And he sent this message saying, look, British forces stopped going north, you know, so on. So we did, and turned round and
came back.
Back to Athens. And I've been in Athens only quite a short time. The month of November, I suppose, and early December. And then the AMALAS, which was the communist guerrilla party, tried to overthrow the government. And then I left that scene about. I was then sent to the Staff College at Haifa for 6 months.
Right.
And can't really tell you about the worst of Athens because I wasn't actually there.
Right.
Well,
which was pretty bloody, wasn't it?
It was horrible.
Yeah.
We had a lot of casualties.
Yeah.
And great unpleasantness.
And a lot of sort of flack. I mean, verbal flack,
yeah,
from people in England.
Yeah. We had MPs coming out telling us we were killing our allies. And, you know,
Till eventually they sent a chap out from the TUC, didn't they?
Yes.
Called Walter Citrine.
That's right. Yeah. Well, Churchill came as well.
Did he? Mm. Yeah. On his way back from one of the...
From, either Tehran or Cairo. Or something. Mm. And he was brought up from Paris in a tank. When the rough stuff was, but the Greeks were sort of using the sewers to move around in,
yeah,
because they knew their way around, and you must get this from Vic because he's
right,
commanding. I've talked to my old company. I handed it over to a chap called Jimmy Barnes, who then got killed in Athens.
Yeah.
I handed over my company to him. Quite a lot of them, and the Greeks were sort of running around in the streets, dressed up like women with skirts on, carrying bombs from house to house.
somewhere else.
Would have been. That's what they'll be across.
Behind it, you're right.
Yeah, yeah.
But then I got sent off myself.
Yeah, you went to Haifa.
I went to Haifa for 6 months.
Yeah.
And then I was brigade major of 10 brigades in 4 div.
Right.
Back in Greece again.
Back in Greece.
Funny enough.
Yeah.
So I returned to Greece where I had a lot of me.
Right.
Because we had to, interpreter officers.
Right.
Attached to us.
Yeah.
Some of them were great friends of mine still.
Yes. And
it was lucky for me I went back to Greece again for another year as BM in 4 div.
Right, yes.
But that was at the end of my parachute thing.
Did you stay on in the army after the war?
No, Colin Callender was the general commanding.
Yeah.
He really tried hard to encourage me to stay on. You know, I was then 26 or something,
yes.
And then been through the staff college and that sort of thing.
Mm.
And been a BM for a year. And I said, now I was trying to have it to go.
Mm.
Because I witnessed one or two things which appealed to me.
Yep.
One of the battalions in that particular brigade, I can't remember whether it was the Duke of Cornwall or Somerset or something, anyway, some colonel was sent out to command them who'd been captured in Dunkirk.
Mm.
And he was then sent out to command his first battalion, having missed the whole war through no fault of his own.
Right.
And it was pathetic, and you know, chaps were coming down in rank who'd done extremely well. And
right.
It was already starting.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, look, I'm only a temporary gent anyway, you know.
Right.
I wasn't Sanchez or anything.
Right.
Given the meet and commission thing.
Yeah.
So I said not. And I'd got married. I'd finally come home with some leave and got married.
Right. Yeah.
My wife was not keen to marry a soldier anyway.
Right.
She was actually a rare officer. She wanted to marry a sailor either.
Quite.
No, I came out. So I had to think about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you, what was the, I mean, going back a bit, what was the sort of, how should I put it, the sort of feel of 4 Para and 2nd Brigade, I mean, generally speaking.
Very high.
It was a very good brigade.
Yeah, it was an excellent brigade, and 4th Town was very good indeed.
Yeah.
And not of it was to the Coxman in his leadership, but they were, they were a good crowd. They melded together. I mean, they forgot all their old regimental, you know, affiliations. Went up very quickly. Really, once the Red Beret arrived.
Yeah. Yeah. Is that a popular thing, the Red Beret?
Yes, I think it was. I mean, someone realized something had happened. Because by Bulford, we all ran around with everything you could think of.
Different hats.
Yes,
yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And then, of course, some bright spark, I think, probably got the right idea by getting a whole Cameron battalion, so they were all basically Scotsmen.
And yeah.
The advantage was they had their own quartermasters,
yeah,
adjutants, all the jobs people didn't want.
Yes. Funny, I said that somewhere
the other day.
You say that, you agree with that?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. All because the unpleasant jobs, the RQMS and things like that.
I was adjutant of the 4th battalion in Bulford and had to get them overseas. The Lieutenant Dean didn't want anything to do with it. The colonel, he said, look, if you can get on with it. So
right.
Remember us
coming out as a unit at all.
No.
We came out individually.
Quite, yes.
To get a wash and a brush up from there, because
yes.
We were up on the mountaintops living in sangers, you know, these little stone
quite.
Things up on the mountains.
Did you have your own reinforcements from that, the theatre?
Yes. No, we got... Well, Nigel Ryder's case in point. I mean, he came up with Rodney Holmes, his father was a cricketer, and he got himself killed the other day in an avalanche. Anyway, they came up from Fondre somewhere. I don't know who sent them up, but they weren't parachute chaps. They'd done a parachute course.
Yeah.
But even in Italy, we were getting officers in from other regiments who were, for one reason, quite a few came from Iceland. I mean, that division that had been in Iceland
all that time.
Felt they were miles away from the war, so
right.
Some of them, I think, volunteered. They were good chaps. They volunteered to parachute, and then they came in.
Yeah.
They really came in from a battalion of another regiment.
Right, yeah.
And then converted overnight, but they weren't. I don't think we ever had one other parachutist, so to speak. They came in from us. We had some very good South Africans, too.
We do. And where do you...
Three or four South African officers, first class.
Did you have a training base?
Yeah, we had a brigade training base down at Fodger, which Jamie Gurley ran for a while when he was recuperating from malaria or something.
Yeah.
I think Jamie ran it and trained them to jump there.
Right.
So there was a jumping school.
Right.
Pretty basic one.
Mm.
Nothing like the refinements, so-called, of Ringway.
Yeah.
They just stuff them in an airplane and don't get on with it, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's where they came from. I'm not sure whether the troops reinforcements came from.
In Greece, you jumped from Dakotas, did you?
Yes.
Yeah, American again.
Yes.
Yeah.
We jumped from Dakotas in Greece, and in France.
Mm.
And I found the excellent plane. So you jumped from Dakotas?
Yeah, I've never jumped from Dakotas. I've jumped. The first airplane I jumped out of was a Valletta, which was a poor man's Dakota, really. I mean, it was the British.
Was it when they went out of two doors?
No, you had one in what? That. No, the next, the first two-door aircraft the Brits had, the British had, was a thing called the Beverly.
Here we are. The Decatur's next airplane. Not of time, right.
But it was a real workhorse, and they're still flying.
Oh, it's still flying, yes. Yes, that's right, they are. Very good indeed.
It was a classic airplane, really.
Yes. We had occasional dramas. I remember one jump, rehearsal jump, or practice jump, or something. In our battalion and one of the others. I want to characterize on the jump because acid has been spilt on the strops somehow, and the strops have snapped. And one never knew whether it was sabotage or whether it was accidental or something. But there's nothing to do with the Decatur, I didn't
know.
Just a mistake, I think, somewhere. But I thought they were very good, steady airplanes. Quite comfortable.
Better than the Whitley, anyway.
Whitley's terrible. But you've probably got photographs in that book, because we all gathered up like cattle.
Yeah,
you shuffled along on your bottom.
Because you couldn't stand up.
You shuffled along on your bottom, and then tried to get yourself sorted out alternately. And there was a very good chance of banging your nose.
Because
if you thrust yourself forward, which you were told to do, and you thrust, if your nose was too big or you thrust yourself too hard,
that was it.
Yeah, you came down with the nose up to pouring of blood, which is not a good way to start a
quite
war.
And at what stage did you start jumping with kit bags? Because that was quite a new thing, wasn't it, really? It was about Africa, wasn't it?
About Africa, I think.
Because up to then, everything